This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. He's now a senior strategist with the U.S. Army, and he joins me now to discuss the ongoing debate over the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which President Obama asked to be changed in his State of the Union address. Colonel McGinnis has also written recently in Human Events on the issue of the Pentagon on its mandate on how to approach the climate change issue. And, Colonel, it's always great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Greg.
Well, we should first of all remind our listeners, because you and I have talked about Don't Ask, Don't Tell before, that you were on the military working group panel back in 1993 that put this policy together. You have written briefly for the New York Times on this issue in the last day or so, basically explaining why you think it's very important for Secretary Gates, Admiral Mullen, and others to really take the time to understand why this policy was put into place to begin with. Explain why.
Yeah, absolutely. We looked extensively at what military unit cohesion is and readiness are and the implications this has for the overall effectiveness of our force. This isn't something that most civilians that haven't been in the military and dealt with the issues like this necessarily understand. It's not easy to explain, but it's very critical, and we spend extensive time on that. My concerns ultimately are the risks that are involved here, Greg. If you decide to repeal this, and of course that takes Congress, not the Pentagon or the President. They can't repeal anything. But if Congress were to go ahead and repeal, that means that they have completely said that the findings of the 93 law are no longer valid, and that would really surprise me. Even though Mr. Gates promises to do another study group that would look extensively and ask all the soldiers in the field and all their family members about how this impacts them, the risk that we face is that if they repeal this, that, and I believe there is a sizable part of the population of this military that is at war today that will say, that's enough. They will leave. The mothers and fathers of young people that now are a very small part of the population that might consider joining will be a smaller pool. Only 3 out of every 10, 17, 24-year-olds even qualify to serve in the military. So that's going to shrink. What that means ultimately is we don't have enough soldiers to do the job today. And ultimately, and I know this is, people are going to accuse me of fear-mongering. No, I think it's reality. We will have to figure out how to fill those ranks, and the only alternative is the draft.
Colonel, you also point out in your short piece in the New York Times today that looking at what other countries have done in allowing gays to openly serve needs to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt. Explain why.
Well, the evidence is really anecdotal, and I was on the BBC yesterday with a soldier from the British forces, and he talked anecdotes. Shove aside anecdotes. We need to deal with real objective information. Then we need to deal with the differences in cultures. We need to recognize that we are a volunteer, not a conscript army like most of them. And then when you recognize our most important possible peers at battle, the Chinese, the Russians, they do not embrace this. They've outright rejected. Even India, the world's largest democracy, has rejected homosexual service for some obvious reasons. Reasons that I think we looked at in 93 and convinced the Congress. This new Congress has got to consider, hopefully, what will be objective evidence.
Last question before we get to climate change, Colonel, and this obviously calls for a bit of speculation, but from your knowledge of the Joint Chiefs and even the Secretary of Defense, are they basically endorsing this because they work for the President of the United States or because they actually think this would work well?
That is a bit divining. I think that Admiral Mullen actually believes that it's a bad policy. To a certain degree, I agree that I don't like the idea that we don't ask people up front whether or not they're homosexual. That's something that I think that never should have been in there, but that's what Bill Clinton gave us, and it's not really part of the law. Mr. Gates, I think, is more skeptical, even though he endorses it because his commander-in-chief says to endorse it. I hope that they are objective in what they're about to do, because if there's any slight indication that they've prejudiced the process, like I saw when I was in the Pentagon working on this issue during the Clinton administration, and I saw the political hacks running around doing things. If we see that, clearly those of us that are concerned will expose it, and that will make a travesty of what they're about to do.
Colonel, you've also written a more extensive piece for Human Events this week, looking at the Pentagon's role and basically their orders coming from the Obama administration on how to confront climate change. We'd heard reports a few weeks ago about satellites being diverted from intelligence gathering operations to keep an eye on the Arctic and so forth. Just how involved is this? What exactly is the Pentagon being asked to do here?
Well, they're being asked to do a lot of things. In the Quadrennial Defense Review, which was published this Monday, one of the four focus areas is on climate change. You know, most people scratch their heads saying, what does that have to do with the security of this country? Well, good question, but that's what they've essentially done. And they're given carte blanche to a certain degree to those elements in the Pentagon that will now take that particular strategy guidance and write it into strategy, which will result in missions and the allocation of resources for all the military services. It is that bad, I believe. We already have a task force for climate change in the Navy. We have a office in the Secretary's group that takes that sort of strategy and translates it into orders. There are a host of things that are ongoing that would lead me to believe that ultimately this administration would like to see a command on climate change that would be able to do some of the environmental sort of things that they pretend to be true. And yet the science, as far as I'm concerned, is questionable at this point. You know, for us to invest and change military missions and favor this so-called climate control agenda in the military means that we're not watching terrorists as much. We're not being able to fight terrorists and our wars abroad as much. We're more focused on glaciers, trees, and the size of whatever in the atmosphere. And yet the science, as I said moments ago, is still questionable, especially if you consider the ClimateGate mess and then this recent report out of the UN that said all the glaciers in the Himalayas were melting and, you know, India was going to go dry. And, of course, they retracted that. So we need to have some common sense. And yet the Pentagon, I'm afraid, is beginning, at least the appointees, to lose a grip on what's real.
Colonel, you mentioned a moment ago that this could distract our resources from the threats that we know for sure exist. Just how worried are you that this could diminish our ability to secure this nation?
I think any use of resources for especially parts of this is not the appropriate use for what the military gives us. So I am concerned about that. It's not out of control yet, but I can see the real possibility is you get some environmental ideologues in the Pentagon hierarchy that can start to divert resources. You start with the primary document, the Quadrennial Defense Review that came out this week. It has all the right words in there. All you have to do is put those words into practice, and you begin to suck up resources that, ought to be used elsewhere.
Colonel, fascinating insight. Thank you very much, as always, for your insight on both topics.
Thanks, Greg.
Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, senior strategist for the U.S. Army. His writings on Don't Ask, Don't Tell you can find in the New York Times and on the Pentagon and climate change at humanevents.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.